from KQED.
Good morning. This is the California Report. I'm Lily Jamali. Today is tax day in Butte County. Property taxes are due. One-time residents of places like Paradise and Magalia, much of which were leveled in the campfire, have been packing into the county assessor's office in recent days. They're there looking for deferrals on paying taxes for homes that no longer exist. Here's Butte County Assessor Diane Brown.
Myself, I've done probably close to 100. The rest of the staff, we just got our files back from Paradise on Tuesday, so we're still getting those organized, so we haven't done any of them. So we're looking at probably about 18,000 structures that we're going to need to remove, and we're just starting that process.
This weekend also marked 1 month since the campfire ignited, the deadliest and most destructive fire in our state's history. But as awful as this month has been for residents there, there are green shoots. There's a fresh, thin layer of grass on swaths of land that just a month ago were covered in yellow and brown, the tinder that helped the campfire spread as quickly as it did. In a positive development for some families left homeless by the fire, a few have started moving into RV trailers provided by FEMA. KQED's Polly Stryker reports the county got some more trailers this weekend.
FEMA spokesman Brad Pierce says dozens of trailers are either in place or on their way to sites in Mendocino, the Glen County Fairground, Oroville, and Corning. And the list of sites is growing.
So it's very fluid, and I expect that list to grow every day. There's going to be more locations that are ready to go.
Pierce was on his way to the Rolling Hills Casino RV site in Corning Saturday, where 12 trailers were being installed. Survivors are expected to move into them throughout the week.
These are like the one-bedroom or two-bedroom, some are bunks, and then they'll have like a full bed in one end of it, and they come with a kitchen, bathroom, shower.
Pierce says once an order is placed, it takes 24 hours to deliver an RV and about 2 days to install. And where's he living?
I'm living in an RV.
The same kind campfire survivors are getting. Pierce says no one's tracking how many trailers or mobile homes have been ordered to date, but FEMA has access to as many units as the agency needs. They estimate as many as 2,000 units of temporary housing could be called for. For the California Report, I'm Polly Stryker.
2,000 units needed and a total of 16 total RV trailers delivered by my count. Still a long, long way to go. Well, as the new legislative session convened in Sacramento last week, a San Francisco-based advocacy group called on legislators to deal with problems in the state's long-term care system. Advocates say rampant elder abuse and neglect goes unnoticed and unpunished. KQED's Hope McKenney has more.
A recent report from the California Advocates for Nursing Home Reform calls for an overhaul in the Department of Public Health, the agency responsible for oversight of California's nursing homes. Executive Director Pat McGinnis says the quality of care in the state's approximately 1,200 nursing homes has never been worse. The public filed nearly 16,000 complaints against these facilities in the past year.
We need to have annual inspections of these facilities. We need to have safe staffing standards for residential care. We need to have remedies for residents in these facilities, and we don't, and we have very limited residents' rights.
The state auditor reported this year that residents are increasingly subjected to severe neglect, while profits for nursing home chains are soaring. The California Department of Public Health says protecting vulnerable populations in long-term care facilities is a top priority and that it is committed to improving the process. For the California Report, I'm Hope McKenney.
4,000 mental health workers at Kaiser Permanente hit the picket line today for a strike that's expected to last all week. Their main complaint is that Kaiser won't fix understaffing issues that force patients seeking therapy to deal with long wait times for appointments. Here's KQED's health reporter April Domboski.
The Union for Therapists and Social Workers has been drumming up support for its cause for weeks, circulating videos like this one on Facebook. Here, psychologist Kent Coleman says he feels like he's always letting his patients down right after he establishes rapport with them and they start to feel hopeful.
And then I have to tell them that they're only going to get to see me in a month's time or a month and a half.
Kaiser says it's disappointed the union is striking and says some patients may be contacted to reschedule their appointments. It says anyone in need of urgent mental health services will get the care they need.
That was KQED's April Domboski. Well, the Ninth Circuit has struck again. Going into the weekend, the Federal Appeals Court here in San Francisco sided with a lower court to temporarily block President Trump's asylum ban. The Trump administration has argued asylum seekers who cross into the U.S. illegally should not be allowed to even apply for asylum. A majority of the panel said that that policy is, quote, likely inconsistent with existing United States law. Sticking with immigration, we want to update you now on a story about a mother from El Salvador and her 4-year-old son. They were separated back in March at the border. Their separation almost became permanent when a federal judge in San Diego declined to reunite them. Well, KQED's Julie Small has been following this story. She spoke with the mother by phone from Chicago, where she's now at a shelter with her son.
The mom, who asked us to use her middle name, Yvette, described through an interpreter seeing her son again late last month at an immigration detention center in Texas.
He yelled, "Mama," and he went running towards me and he kissed me everywhere and we hugged each other. I had felt an emptiness in my heart, and when that moment happened, I felt like everything changed.
Yvette's son was only 3 when he was taken out of her arms by border agents and sent to a shelter for children in Chicago. Yvette was held in detention in Laredo, Texas.
While I was there, I suffered so much. I couldn't sleep. I had nightmares. Sometimes I trembled.
3 months later, a federal judge in San Diego ordered the Trump administration to reunite thousands of children separated from parents at the border. But Yvette was excluded because of a warrant for her arrest in El Salvador, alleging her involvement in a gang. Attorneys with the National Immigrant Justice Center took on her case. They investigated and found no basis for the allegation. Lisa Koop represented Yvette at her asylum hearing.
She was cross-examined by the government prosecutor for over an hour, and they had every opportunity to bring any evidence that they had that she was in any way affiliated with the gang, and they had nothing.
In late November, a federal judge in Washington, D.C. ordered the government to reunite Yvette with her son.
When he sleeps, he wants to be sleeping, hugging me. And when I get a little bit away from him, he gets scared because he thinks I'm going to go away again.
Dozens of other separated parents are also being told they will never get their kids back. According to attorneys with the ACLU, many of those parents are being denied based on minor criminal convictions or mere allegations of crime, and the denials should be challenged. For the California Report, I'm Julie Small.
This weekend marked 1 month since the deadly campfire ignited in Butte County. In every fire, there are people who ignore evacuation orders. This frustrates fire officials, but in some cases, the people who stay behind do save their homes. Sharon McNary of KPCC says this raises a difficult policy question.
On the night the Thomas Fire broke out last December, it raced toward Clear Point, a hilly neighborhood of hundreds of homes in Ventura.
Mandatory into Clear Point, please, and onto Londo.
Ventura City officials ordered a mandatory evacuation. But Adam Mango stayed to protect his mother's house. The wind-driven fire pelted her home with embers, starting spot fires that he put out with water from the hot tub.
The flames did come in. It was touching the house, and I was using buckets after buckets and crawling on my hands and knees. I mean, it was a spiritual moment.
The Thomas Fire burned most of his neighbors' homes, but he saved his mom's house. Mango was better prepared than most. He'd worked briefly as a firefighter. He told fire experts their evacuation orders should include people like him.
The plans just don't include residents who are prepared, able-bodied, and want to stay and actually help the firefighting efforts.
He got immediate pushback from Ventura City Fire Department Assistant Chief Matt Brock.
And you had a plan. It's that simple. Yeah. The general public doesn't, and that's just the difference.
This is the dilemma fire officials face in every big fire. They know people stay behind, about 10%, according to a U.S. Forest Service study. But officially, the state doesn't want to do anything that could be interpreted as encouraging people to stay. CAL FIRE Deputy Director Mike Mueller says California has no policy to train people how to save their homes if they disregard an evacuation order.
We do not support that at all, and I think it could give the false sense of security to the public.
He says it's a matter of liability for the state. But in 2009, state and local fire officials considered adopting a new policy called Leave Early or Stay and Defend. It was modeled on a long-standing practice in Australia. But that year, a disastrous series of fires in Australia killed 173 people who did not evacuate or who got caught in the fire. That's why California firefighters' official slogan is Ready, Set, Go. Prepare your home to withstand fire and then get out when authorities tell you to. For the California Report, I'm Sharon McNary in Los Angeles.
Let's go to the Central Valley now. After claiming victory on election night, Republican Congressman David Valadao has now conceded defeat. His race was one of two in closely watched congressional districts in the region where some voters claimed they were confused about how and where to cast their ballots. Here's the California Report's Alex Hall.
The elections involved congressional districts in Stanislaus County, where Democrats were targeting Republican incumbent Jeff Denham, and in Kings County to the south, where three-term Congressman David Valadao was in a tight race with challenger T.J. Cox. Both incumbents ultimately lost, but not before voters encountered conflicting information. Modesto attorney Lisa Batista says Stanislaus County polling places ran out of provisional ballot envelopes on election night. And then confusion set in. It's unclear if voters cast provisional ballots in different envelopes, were sent to other polling places to cast their ballots, or simply got discouraged and went home.
I was getting so many phone calls about problems with provisional ballots and broken machines and not enough places to vote. They were coming in so fast.
Voters in Kings County were told they could register same day and conditionally vote at polling places. Turns out that was not true. 126 ballots were initially considered invalid, but a judge later decided the registrar's error should not prevent the ballots from being counted.
I don't think the voters are at fault here.
ACLU attorney Raul Macias wrote a letter to officials last year saying California's conditional voter registration law, which debuted this year, was too restrictive.
I don't know how they can be expected to be experts in election law. It sounds like even the election official was confused about what was allowed here.
Kim Alexander, president of the California Voter Foundation, notes there's a wide range of opportunities to vote in the state's 58 counties.
And you see counties that have lots of staff and lots of resources being able to provide early voting opportunities, and other counties are just barely getting by.
More challenges are on the way in 2020 in counties that adopt new rules under the Voters' Choice Act, which aims to expand access to voting. For the California Report, I'm Alex Hall in Fresno.
Support for the California Report comes from Block Construction, a builder committed to enhancing communities in the Bay Area and Central Coast. BLACH.com. Block Construction. Together, building greatness. The Pacific Auction Company, dedicated to making fundraising auctions successful for 16 years, serving nonprofits, schools, and foundations. Learn more at PacificAuctionCompany.com. And Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose Fund for Strategic Innovation supports transformative ideas that benefit humanity while protecting the natural world, recognizing through science the interdependence of all living systems.
And that's the California Report for this Monday, December 10th, a production of KQED Public Radio. Follow me on Twitter. I'm at Lily Jamali. Follow us. We are at Cal Report Tweets, and tell us how we're doing. I'm Lily Jamali. Have a great Monday.